Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to Living the Quantum Dream with your host, Cynthia Sue Larson, inviting you to explore ideas about how you can enjoy a better way of life from one of today's top experts in quantum consciousness. Cynthia Sue Larson is a life coach and the best-selling author of Quantum Jumps, Reality Shifts, High Energy Money, and Aura Healing Meditations, who has been publishing the free monthly Reality Shifters e-zine since 1999 through realityshifters.com. Living the Quantum Dream with Cynthia Sue Larson is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age, heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Cynthia Sue Larson, and our guest today is Barbara Hand Clow. Barbara is an internationally acclaimed astrologer, ceremonial teacher, author, and Mayan calendar researcher. Her many books include Revelations of the Ruby Crystal, Revelations of the Aquarian Age, The Pleiadian Agenda, Alchemy of the Nine Dimensions, Awakening, the Planetary Mind, the Mayan Code, and her latest book, Revelations from the Source. Welcome, Barbara.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi. This is such a treat to talk to you. And I think a lot of people are going to be excited to hear this interview because you really have contributed so much so far just through your career. A lot of nonfiction books, a lot of fiction books. But before we get into that, I just want to get a sense of what makes you smile when you first get up in the morning.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Yeah. So did you just ask a question?
Yes, I'd love to know. It's kind of a surprising question, but I'd love to know what makes you happy, what brings you joy when you first get up in the morning each day?
Oh, okay. I thought it was a question. The thing I enjoy the most is watching the sun come up because we have, I'm in New Mexico, and we have a patio outside our bedroom window. And every morning I get to watch the sun rise, and I love to watch it going back and forth across the horizon. So I like to start the day that way, you know? And then we get out in the sun in the middle of the day again.
That's so amazing. And I think it's so important to keep that connection to nature. And, of course, it makes sense as an astrologer. Of course, you'd be interested in the movements of the sun and the earth. But I didn't expect that.
Yeah, and last night there was the most incredible conjunction of the moon and Venus. It was just beautiful. They were conjunct in Capricorn, and it was just exquisite. And it's going to come again in a month. On December 6th, you'll see it again. But just beautiful.
Wow.
The skies are blessing us, which we need at this time.
Yes, we sure do.
Yeah.
The blessings are good. And is there anything that really excites you these days, right now, just in general, things that inspire you, besides looking at the sky? That's such a good one. And that's something all of us have access to.
Well, I'm in kind of an odd phase right now because, as you know, I wrote nonfiction for 30 years. And at this point, for the last 10 years, I've been writing a fictional trilogy. And so I'm busy promoting that right now. And it's really interesting to talk about fiction versus nonfiction conversations. So I'm kind of in the middle of a learning curve, but I like learning curves.
I do too. Now, I've only written one fictional book, and I don't know if you would agree with me, but I felt at the time that I could put more truth in that fiction book than in any of my nonfiction books. Mm-hmm. Would you say that's true? Like you can kind of say things that you might not.
Well, we're in the middle of it. It is interesting to bring that up because we're in the middle of a very interesting period right now where nobody is trusting any information at all. So I suppose maybe I'm lucky I switched to fiction. You know, and created something imaginative at this point. Because
yes.
People are just so confused about what to believe, especially because of the mass media. So
yes.
I guess maybe the spirits were on my side on this one. I hope.
I think so. And I love that you just completed this third book in the trilogy right when we're in the thick of such interesting times. You know, it's really strange timing, but there's clearly something divinely guided and timed with the book. Now, the first book in the trilogy was Revelations of the Ruby Crystal. Is that right? 2015.
Yeah, that's the first one. That came out in 2015. That's right.
The timing is amazing because this is following 2012. I think a lot of people were noticing some big changes in energies right around, it wasn't necessarily 2012, but anywhere from 2010, certainly through 2015. Then your second book, Revelations of the Aquarian Age, that came out in 2018. So obviously, did you have some strategy about when these would be coming out? Or I also know as a writer, I never quite know when the books are going to come out, but it looks like yours were beautifully orchestrated. Something
yeah.
going on.
Yeah, I agree. You're talking about the illustrations.
Yes. And
yeah, it's because as far as the timing is concerned, we were coming right up to the end of the Mayan calendar back in 2011, 2012.
Right.
And what I did at that point was I did an astrological analysis of like the next 10, 15 years. And when I looked ahead to the next 10, 15 years, especially to 2020 and 2021, I could see that reality was going to crack. I could see that the structures on the planet were actually just going to crack into pieces. And so because I saw that, then I decided, well, the whole Mayan calendar issue and the idea of evolving to another level of consciousness has been a really big deal for a lot of people. And so then I decided, well, if reality is going to actually crack as a result of this transformative level of change, I want to track that. I want to describe that 10, 11 year period of time. So that's what got this whole thing started. I just decided I want to track that, and the only way I could imagine doing it was in a fictional trilogy. And then with a trilogy, what goes on with trilogies is the first book is always the introduction of the characters and the milieu that they live in, and the basic structure of the whole trilogy has to be right there in the first novel with all of those parts of it right in place. And so I just started out with that first book back in 2011, and it's been an amazing process. I must have been guided because it turned out that the world did crack in 2019-2020, and it turned out being able to describe that through the lives of characters in Italy, in the United States, is actually a really valuable contribution.
Well, that was amazing that you chose Italy to focus on so much, because obviously the whole world was obviously in the whole world of 20, obviously in
yeah,
the world of 20, obviously
Italy. To tell you the truth, I didn't really choose almost anything, because what happened is as soon as I decided to create the trilogy, then all of the characters and all of the background material came in one day. I sat down with a yellow legal pad and just scrawled as fast as I could for like 3 or 4 hours to write it all down. And it definitely was a gift from the muse or a gift from some other dimension or something like that. It was really quite astonishing. And I was really happy to see that the main theater of the action was Italy, because Italy is also the midline of our planet. It's the place where all of the conflict between East and West comes together at 12 degrees east longitude. And this is according to Carl Kalman, the Swedish Mayan calendar researcher. And so I was really happy to see it was going to happen in Italy because I felt like it would give us a lot more information. And in fact, that has really turned out to be true. And Italy was the first place where COVID really hit hard. And at this point, there's a tremendous reaction going on in Italy against all of the restrictions coming from the government. At this point, they're one of the first countries to really react strongly against that. So I think that's interesting that it worked out that way.
Boy, I do too. And I've noticed that some of the top researchers in physics, I sometimes talk about quantum physics in this program, Living the Quantum Dream, and Carlo Rovelli, he's an Italian physicist currently living in France, but the fact that he's from Italy and he's talking about subjective realities, which I think is such a cutting-edge concept for our worldview, our paradigms that are definitely... I love how you talk about the world cracking, that reality is about to crack. It sure seems that way to a lot of people. And,
yeah.
And I think this Italian focus is spot on. It's amazing. So going back to the theme of these books and just the fact that you got this download in one day, I love that. And obviously, you could see that something was coming. I love how you did that 10 to 15 year analysis, tracking the end of the Mayan calendar, which is not just the Mayans. I've noticed a lot of I used to go to conferences, and the Hopi Indians would talk about this. Australian Aborigines would talk about it. I'd go to the Language of Spirit conferences, and it was just common knowledge and this was back around the year 2000, that they just could see this coming. So a lot of people have known that things were about to change. But your books are so important for, I think, all of those of us in the West right now. A lot of people may not have been familiar that this was coming. It's a shock. I hear from people, I heard from one just today saying, I just want to go back. I don't want this anymore. You know, how do I get out of here? But I love how your books are so hopeful. Your characters have this beautiful way of evolving, growing, and transforming.
Well, you know, I liked the way the characters that came in were really unusually intelligent and psychic and emotionally intense and well-developed. Because a lot of what's really frustrating right now is that people just feel flattened. They don't really feel like they can have an opinion about this or that, basically, because everything is pretty much stacked on one side. And so people feel silenced. They feel a little bit helpless. And one of the things I love about this trilogy at this point, in fact, it's starting to help me maintain my own sanity because these people are really, really smart. There's a great Jungian analyst. There's a really exciting, very complex painter. There's a wonderful astrologer in the book. There's an Italian alchemist. There's New York Times reporter and a wonderful character who's an early church researcher, Sarah Appel. And so they all have very, very different perspectives. And I'm finding this and complexity and their intelligence is helping me almost keep my complexity and intelligence at this point. Because it's almost as if we've been hit by a tidal wave, if you know what I mean.
I totally know what you mean. I think that's where the reason people are sometimes saying they just want out, they want back, they don't like this. I love how you say that there's this sort of silencing, flattening going on, like kind of getting squelched. Like there's not the same respect that one would hope for, that people could listen to those who have different perspectives and different experiences.
Yeah. And that people feel silenced, because one of the things that the public health system has created in this environment is that people are being encouraged to watch other people, you know, and so you start to feel like, well, maybe your neighbor is going to be watching you or the local police or whatever. And so people are really like, they're not talking because they're so, you know, concerned about what that could create. And so meanwhile, would it be fair to say that Cynthia, that this is the most talkative novel you've ever read in your life?
Yes.
We're all talking to each other.
I know. It's so refreshing, and it really, I think you're right. That's what, it would be inspiring for people to read these books just to get that dose of sanity and to hear the kind of thoughtful dialogue that can be emotional, passionate even, but always, like you said, smart, intelligent. And to me, I think that there, I could feel the respect, even if people disagree. That's what I find so invigorating, so hopeful, that because we need respect. If we don't have it, then I think that's when things really start to fall apart.
Yeah, and then regarding the timeline that goes through all three novels, all of the background information in the trilogy is correct. In other words, the reporting on American politics or Vatican politics in Italy, and global and also global issues, all of that is very factual and very accurate, so that you can count on that background being accurate. And then, of course, all of the characters are completely fictional, and including Pope Francis is a character in Source. And of course, your writers of fiction are we're free. It's okay for us to speculate on public figures because they're out there all the time doing public things, and we have the right to speculate on what they're doing and what they're thinking about. And so Pope Francis is such a fascinating individual that it was really, really fun to work with him as a character. And of course, his portrayal of what he's thinking about and what he's doing, of course, is all fictional.
Right. Yeah, it had to be because it's fiction after all. But you're right, it is kind of a current time historical novel, like a historical novel of these pandemic.
It's a historical novel of the pandemic, as it turns out. That's absolutely true.
And that's amazing. I don't know of any others that do what your trilogy does in terms of capturing that whole feeling and these amazing times that we're in.
Well, actually, there's some 19th century writers, especially English writers, who have written that way, and I've always loved them because if I really want to understand a particular king or queen or a particular historical period, often I find that the expression of those times in a novel, it almost gives me more information than non-fictional research in a way, because it's storytelling. And when you get to see people responding to the times and responding to people around them, I think you actually get a lot more information, especially if those characters are interesting characters.
Absolutely.
You know, we've been kind of beaten up by a lot of really bad fiction with really boring characters or a lot of violence. And it's a shame because fiction is the opportunity to understand the psychology of people and to understand the emotional patterns that they live with in relationship to what's going on.
Right. And due to your astrological background, I'm sure you have awareness of things that the mainstream news narrative is currently clueless about. They're not always as tuned in as you would be, knowing what to look for. And so I would love to know if there was anything that you wish was being better covered in the news during these times, and you know, something that perhaps you did include in your books that you'd that's happening, but people don't know what's happening. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, I think the most frustrating thing about our times is the one-sidedness of the media. And there's two, for instance, on the COVID issue, there's two sides to this question of regarding vaccinations and regarding public health. And the wholesale denial by the public media of anything that's negative regarding the COVID dynamic has been very, very frustrating. Because, you know, the facts are, if people hear the same thing over and over and over again, they just have a tendency to start to believe it. And that's been very frustrating. It's been very frustrating during this period for the people who don't agree with what's going on, for example, because they've been basically silenced and threatened with what they believe. It's basically what they believe about their own bodies. And so I don't want to go too deeply into that because I don't want to get into one side or the other, but I think the frustrating thing has been presenting basically only one side of the dynamic. And it's very dangerous because that means the other side of the dynamic doesn't have a voice, a credible voice. And so then it's easy to make it look like they're all a bunch of idiots. But they're not. You know, how many times a day do you have to hear people say, oh, I follow the science? Well, there's lots of science here, and not only one side of the science, if you get my drift.
I totally do. I've actually recovered this last year from long-haul COVID. I caught it way before it was... I got it before it was supposed to be in California in January 2020, and so I've had quite a journey. But anyway, as a result of that, I'm keenly, personally aware of some of the ways that the mainstream media is not telling things. They're not telling the truth about what I know from my journey with long-haul COVID and things that just are, well, anyway, I don't want to get into that. But yeah, but you're right, and I would love to see that kind of respect, because that's exactly what I come up against. I do have a degree in physics. I am a scientist. So when people tell me, like,
and you,
well,
you can't follow the science by just using one side of the dynamic. Because
right.
Science is about in constant experimentation and discussion about many, many possibilities. And so it's really annoying. I love science. One of my books is actually The Alchemy of Nine Dimensions. Is actually a fairly scientific book. But nobody's following the science. People are following the dogma.
And
it makes me mad to see science being called science when it's not science.
Right, absolutely. Totally agree. Well, you mentioned The Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, and this is the book where you get into that multidimensionality, which actually is a very strongly scientific topic, which my listeners love. So it also gets into personal transformation. Is there anything you'd like to share about this experience of multidimensionality?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Maybe a quick
a great place to go. Because Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is a scientific analysis of the Pleiadian agenda. And I channeled the Pleiadian agenda material in in 1995. And then once I that's the only channeled book I've ever written. And once that material came in, first of all, it contradicted a lot of the current science of the time. And then for the next few years after it came out, and I was out teaching it all over the world, and after it came out, piece by piece, the science that came through the Pleiadians was verified by conventional science and physics and mathematicians out there in the real world. So as I watched that process, and I tracked it, I kept records and all that, because one by one, all these outrageous statements coming from these Pleiadian beings, whoever they are, was being verified. And so I kept track of it all, and then I published Alchemy of Nine Dimensions, and that the first version was 2004, 9 years later. And then I revised it again in 2011, because even more of it was verified after I got the 2004 edition out. And so basically, Alchemy of Nine Dimensions is a scientific analysis of the channel book. And I don't think anybody's ever done that, at least that I've heard of so far. And so gradually, I began to realize that that part of my research was actually the most important part of it, or at least the most original. A lot of the other books I've written are discussions about topics that other people have already delved into. So when it came time to write the trilogy, I was trying to find a way to help people get access to many dimensions, to become multidimensional, because I've gotten such value and creativity out of being able to contact a lot of dimensions. So actually, this trilogy is actually a multidimensional trilogy. Because the characters in the novel are very multidimensional, and different characters have different aspects of that ability and psychic skill. And so, if you think about it, when you read fiction or when you go see a good movie, you want to be changed and inspired by what you come in contact with. You want something to give you a new insight or a new way of seeing things that you've never had before. And I do believe this trilogy, especially this third book, Revelations from the Source, is actually, is really truly a multidimensional experience, especially the ceremony at the very end of the novel.
I couldn't agree with you more about the importance of dimensionality and how it changes us, and that's another coincidence that I have with you. I'm noticing a couple synchronicities because I wrote mostly nonfiction, just a tiny bit of fiction, and then also I touched in dimensionality in my book Reality Shifts, and also I felt it was kind of like a channel thing, if you will, but I noticed it tended to match up with what other people had noticed about the dimensional consciousness and levels of consciousness, and this seems tied in with what we now know of as the Mandela effect, reality shifts, quantum jumps. So it's not just being psychic, it's the gateway to lots of different strengths and capabilities.
Yeah, and then the Jungian analyst, Lorenzo Giannini, is really the key to this whole issue. And the book's cover itself with that zodiac and then that force rising through it, in some ways is like Lorenzo Giannini's tower in Rome. And in his tower, he ends up taking different characters through different sessions, frequently through their past lives, and then sometimes into just other lifetimes of other people a long time ago. And gradually what happens is Lorenzo Giannini really becomes like the vortex in the middle of this whole thing, turning all this energy around all of these dimensions. And I just absolutely loved writing that character. I mean,
I can hear it in your voice.
I loved it, and I thought about becoming a Jungian analyst in Chicago in 1982. I had the opportunity to train as an analyst at the Chicago Jung Institute, and because I was a mother with four kids and little kids, I just didn't see how I could ever do it. So in many ways, Lorenzo Giannini is kind of a fulfillment of something that I really wanted to do myself.
Well, that's the best kind of character, though, because it's really juicy, you know? It's got that, yeah. All that inspiration can go right into it.
Yeah.
Man. Well, I was going to ask how is writing this trilogy changed you, but clearly when you get to do a character like that, and like you said, he just feels like he's this vortex where he's this, you know, charismatic individual that where everything really comes and goes through him. You can really start to understand the meta messages. I think that's always a key to, well, this is the first pandemic I've lived through. I was going to say it's always the key when you go through a pandemic or the ending of crashing,
yeah, breaking apart the world. Yeah, and another thing that really took it to another level is his relationship with his partner, Claudia. And Claudia Togliatti showed up right away in the first novel, and then she's been a character going all the way through this. And she's also a great astrologer and a great woman, just a wonderful, deep, emotionally intense, very sexy woman. And so it's through getting two characters like that together that everything just goes to another incredible level, just like a great couple can do that, you know. And it was so much fun to get those two to meet each other and then see what happened once they got together. Really,
yeah, well,
really fun.
Yeah. I love that. I just love how your books take this thread and the story goes through all three, so that often we get to, when you typically read a book and you love it, then it's like, what's now? Now what do I do? Where does it go? No problem when you've got this series. So it's really super cool that you've got the whole trilogy complete now. One thing I wanted to ask about was Sarah, because she had this interesting idea that, you know, she's one of the characters in your book, and I'm bringing her up because she's that, you mentioned she's the early church researcher, and so if people don't know who we're talking about, what I thought was fascinating was she had some interesting ideas about what Jesus was doing here on Earth, and you know, she was actually
you're leading this along really well, because what we're getting into is how much the characters are actually a part of the author's psyche. usually they are. So what we're talking about here is Sarah Appel, who's an early church researcher, patristics, and she ends up with a New York Times reporter. And it was fun playing with their relationship because he was very left brain and very, very academic. And she's very academic, too, because she's an early church researcher.
Right.
But, in fact, she's completely psychic. And so what happened in 1982, after I decided I couldn't become a Jungian analyst, because I just couldn't family level, I decided to go to graduate school instead with Matthew Fox. Yeah, right. So in 1982-83, I went to graduate school and what do you think I was studying in graduate school? early church history, right? So then I got out of graduate school, and I still had a husband and four children because they keep on going permanently. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to get a Ph.D., but I couldn't get a Ph.D. because of all the family responsibilities. So Sarah is really my Ph.D., where she goes back into the early church and really gets deeply into what was really going on 2,000 years ago in attempting to define the identity of Jesus or Christ at the time. Because those early church councils where they tried to decide, you know, is he a god? Is he a man? Is he a man god? Is he god man? Whatever. The more deeply you get into that stuff, you can see that some individual appear on this planet, and I often think from an extraterrestrial source, which is played out. I explore that a little bit in this novel. But that whole period is a fascinating period because it's the beginning of the age of Pisces, which is the age that is ending now. Basically, the age of Pisces is over with, and we're into the early stage of Aquarius, which is one of the reasons things are so transformative and stressful at this time. It's always very difficult when we move from one great age to the next great age, because a lot of the stuff from the previous age just gets thrown out, and then the new age starts. And so that's where I had an absolute blast with Donald Trump, because of course Donald Trump is a major character, especially in the third book, because you can't avoid Donald Trump during our period in history. And one of the characters, I think it's Claudia, comes to the conclusion that Donald Trump is very much like St. Paul 2,000 years ago. That Donald Trump just came in and just went, get rid of this, get rid of that, just throw it out, we're going to do something different. And so I just had a blast playing. But in his case, of course, with Trump, everything that I reported on is absolutely accurate in terms of what was going on historically and what he was saying at the time.
Right. Yeah. And I love how you point out this huge age of Pisces that is coming to an end. And when people think of Jesus, they think of Christianity. Often the symbol of the fish comes to mind. Do you think that we'll have some symbol like associated with the age of Aquarius? There's the astrological symbol, but I haven't seen that yet. I'd love to know your thought on that. Will that symbol at some point leap out and people will just feel, this is us now?
Yeah, and on that level, the novel is really actually spanning, this novel, all three of them, is actually spanning 4,000 years, because the age of Aries is before the age of Pisces, and the age of Aries was around 2400 BC until about 2200 BC, so it's like 2,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago again. So one of the things that has happened, and I don't know whether this is because of the astrology or because of the way history worked, but the issues of the age of Aries, 2000 BC to 0 AD, they were not really resolved because the age of Aries was the age of warfare. So what happened when the world religions, from Abraham, Judaism and Christianity and Islam, developed during the age of Pisces, during the last 2,000 to 4,000 years, is unfortunately the wars didn't go away and they became wars for God. And so one of the strong themes in this novel is that the one thing we can predict about the age of Aquarius, which we're coming into now, is all of this warfare can't continue. Because at this point, almost everybody on the planet knows that the planet can't sustain it. One of the most environmentally destructive things on the planet is warfare. And all of the manufacturing of all of the hardware and all of the nuclear waste, and I could go on and on and on. It's a tremendously environmentally destructive issue that never gets talked about. Nobody brings that up in Glasgow when, you know, when they're having all their big conferences on carbon credits. So the novel is really dealing with some of these great background issues that all of us are trying to get a perspective on.
I love that. Yeah, I can see the symbol of the Aquarius. There are lots of good symbols, but maybe just the two water splashy signs. Something simple that it could just look like cave art. And it could symbolize peace, you know, that this is a time of a new dawn, of a new age. And the hope you talked about, this would be the fifth world, that there are actually going to be two more of these crises down the road. So how do you feel about that? Do you see that coming as well from your astrological hat?
Well, and then, of course, the novel comes right up. The timeline ends in 221, our time. And we're coming right up against the issue of the Great Reset and the issue of artificial intelligence and robotics. And these are very, very Aquarian Age issues in terms of how much we're going to be controlled by frequencies and artificial intelligence and robotics. And so, of course, what I had to do in the novel is I had to bring in those Aquarian themes, and it's interesting to watch how the different characters are responding to that stuff, just like all of us are having a struggle with a lot of it now. But we can't run away from it, because it's very Aquarian. Aquarius is ruled by the planet Uranus, and Uranus rules technology and all of these complex issues that we're coping with. And what's always dangerous is to not talk about it. The reason why I enjoyed writing about it so much was to get it out in the open and take a look at it.
You know? Yes. I helped host the Foundations of Mind conference on artificial intelligence a few years ago, and one of the creators of that, Sophia Robot from Hanson Robotics, was there, and I got a chance to talk to him about just these things that are going on. And it's such a strange and interesting time. And Henry Stapp was there at that conference, and I was presenting a paper on if artificial intelligence asks questions, will nature answer? This is a very physics-based paper, and it was having to do with the ideas of, well, Henry Stapp, of course, the physicist who was attending our conference, and he basically is following along the lines of the work of John Wheeler, the physicist, who was a contemporary of Albert Einstein. And Wheeler, he's the one that gave us the ideas of it from bit and black holes and so forth. And so Henry Stapp was taking those ideas. And you're exactly right. These matters of robotics, frequencies, artificial intelligence, it's not simply that the technology is here. It's also a matter of how do we now interact and relate to and respect this new development, and what is it exactly, and how do we know if and when something is conscious, and all these good questions, they're huge.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I would love to know just a little bit more background about you and how you came to realize your passion. Obviously, you've got a passion for astrology. You've got a passion for fiction, for sharing these big ideas in a way, which I love. It's storytelling. I think storytellers are priceless because they're the ones that show us the way. They give us enough of a distance so that we can separate ourselves for a moment from, you know, the dreary or horrific elements of our own personal lives, step out of ourselves, and get a view of all that. Did you know early on that you'd be doing this? How did you get a sense of this?
Did I know early on?
That you'd be an astrologer, an author.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. I just once I saw an astrological chart when I was about, I think, 23 years old. And I was with a group of people, and there were some astrologers in the group, and passing a chart around. And so I just took the chart and started reading it. And the astrologers just clammed up and started listening. And then they just kept saying, well, yeah, go ahead and continue. And then they said, well, how did you know that? And that was the first time I'd ever seen an astrological chart, and I could read it. And so then what I discovered, I did, let's go back to when I went to graduate school with Matthew Fox back in 1983, and my basic study was early church history. But also I had to write a graduate thesis, just like anybody else does. And I didn't want to waste time. This is so typical of a mother with a lot of kids. If I was going to do something, I was not going to waste time. So I got Matthew Fox to agree to let me write a master's thesis on a comparison of Jungian psychoanalytic theory, which is basically Jungian psychoanalysis, and past life regression under hypnosis. Because I had the feeling back then, the problem with Jungian analysis is it takes about 3 years, costs $100 or $150 an hour. You got to go 3 times a week, and who can afford that? In order to do it, you got to pay over $100,000, and a lot of people just can't do that. But with past life regression under hypnosis, where you go back into your past lives and explore it, I had the impression that I could get the same level of psychological depth, and so. They agreed to let me do that for my master's thesis. And so in order to do that, I had to do 100 sessions under hypnosis into my past lives. That was the data that I needed in order to write the thesis. So while I was in graduate school, I was doing all those sessions. And lo and behold, what do you think I found? Astrologer after astrologer after astrologer. I've been an astrologer in so many cultures and in so many periods of time that now once I discovered that I understood astrology, then I studied it very hard for 2 years and went and had a teacher and the usual stuff. But the real reason I understand it is actually because of past lives.
That's amazing. And I think it's good to actually have that insight from 100 sessions. That's quite a lot.
Yeah, and one of the reasons, one of the great recommendations about past life therapy, by the way, and the therapists that I used to do all that work, or part of the work, I did actually 3 therapists. But my first therapist was a specialist in going back into lifetimes where you had mastered things and then bringing that knowledge into this lifetime so that you could be successful at something you'd already learned in a past life. And that's one of the great things about that kind of therapy. You could really, really up your learning curve quickly by doing that type of therapy. So I just pulled back all that astrological knowledge that we used to have in the past, and in some cases, the astrologers in the past, especially during the Renaissance, were really brilliant, brilliant astrologers.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So there's Claudia in the book as an astrologer. And this is the first time that I've ever put astrology in my books, except in my astrology books. I wrote 2 astrology books, so of course they're based on astrology. There's no other way to do it. But otherwise, I've deliberately kept astrology out of the books because so it turns so many people off. Well, I think we've come to a point now where a lot of people really are getting a lot of value out of astrology. And so Claudia was able, you know, to really bring that through in this novel.
That's amazing. And I love that. Let's go back to your characters again, because you're bringing up Claudia. We talked about Sarah. We've talked about, Claudia now is the partner to Lorenzo Giannini. Is there a character that we haven't mentioned that you'd like to introduce?
Yeah, we haven't said anything about. Have you read? By the way, have you read Source, Cynthia?
I've read parts of it. I have to admit, I'm really slow at reading fiction. I'm just like ridiculously
okay.
slow.
But you read. At least you're somewhat familiar.
Well, yes.
I'm sure you noticed Armando Pierleone.
I love Armando.
Yeah. Armando Pierleone, the painter.
Yes.
So in the first novel, in Revelations from the Ruby Crystal, Armando is a real bad guy. He's a real abuser of women and a really, really dark character. And my daughter, Elizabeth Clough, we call her Lizzie, is the illustrator for these three books. And so Lizzie's a Scorpio. And so when Armando showed up, Lizzie said, make him really bad, Mom. Just make him really bad. Because I tend to be kind of a nice person, and I'm not necessarily so good with the dark side. And so Armando is a very dark character in the first book who gradually evolves psychologically in the second book because he finds a partner, a woman that he really loves. And then in the third book, wow, Armando just takes off like a rocket.
I love that.
He just transcends. And so it's a great, because I have known people who have really, really been really in a bad place and have gone to a whole other level. And I think all of us, we need to believe that it's possible to do that. And so Armando, in that sense, is a great character.
I think that's one of the greatest things anybody, any story can include, is that kind of an arc where there is somebody who finds that kind of redemption, who is capable of, maybe it's hard for us to look at things that are that dark, but they've lived it, maybe due to circumstance or what have you. But the important thing is they do reach a point where they can draw deeply and face things, you know, draw deeply from that reservoir of fear or anxiety or grief, sadness, anger, what have you, and just take a long look into it and decide love is more important than this, and to trust love. And that is, I mean, if there's a greatest story of all time, I think it's got to include an element of that. And for that reason, I love Armando. So,
yeah.
How amazing.
Mm-hmm. And then my favorite character, just personal favorite.
Yes.
It'll probably surprise you. It's William Adamson.
Oh.
And William Adamson. Yeah, William Adamson is Sarah Appel's father. And the parents, the mother is also in this book. And William is just this dyed-in-the-wool old Boston Catholic guy who discovers as he goes through the trilogy that he was abused as a child by a priest. So William, I just love William. I think William is hysterically funny. when I sit with the novel and crack up, it's something William does. Did you notice him at all? He's just such a real guy.
Yeah. And I think most of us know people like that, and even if we don't agree with their politics, their religion, what have you, but we love them because they're just so true to themselves. And yeah, this, and you do. I love how you just give each of the characters that gift of transformation.
Yeah, there's people out there now who these characters, they're telling me that these characters kind of kept him going through the COVID crisis because they couldn't socialize with anybody and they couldn't see their friends, but they had these characters and these characters became their friends. And that certainly happened to me. I had many, many weeks and months where I would have just soon just stayed home and been writing and not gone to see any of my friends, because all my friends, everybody was splitting into two parts. You're either for a vaccination or you're against a vaccination. Then everybody's bickering at everybody else, you know?
And I know.
Bitching at everybody else, and it's been awful. And meanwhile, here's this tableau of these wonderful characters.
I like how that was not happening in your trilogy. So if people are wondering, like, well, this is all about these times, I don't want to read that. But don't worry, it's not like that in these books. You can put their minds to rest there.
And every book is a standalone. People can, if you want to, people can go ahead and read Source. It's a total standalone. But where you get the best benefit out of a trilogy is always by reading all three books. There's no question about that.
Right. Well, I'd love to make sure that we cover anything that we've not discussed that you'd like to mention. It could be something you found surprising, something that you like, that you teach, that you feel is most important that people learn at this time, anything at all. I want to make sure we get that in there.
I think you tried to elicit a response from me, but I couldn't totally hear you.
Okay. Yes, I'd like to know if there's anything that we have not talked about that you definitely would like to cover. It may be something that you have learned that's been surprising, or things that are important for people to learn at this time?
Well, I think for many of us, dealing with getting a perspective on Christianity and Islam and Judaism, the religions coming from Abraham, I think as the end of the Age of Pisces has occurred, I think that this book is very, very good for getting an overview on how you really are feeling about religion and what it's going to mean to you in your life and in the future. People are contacting me to tell me that trilogy was the last straw, and they've left the church after reading it, Catholics in particular. So I think people who are processing these issues, I think this is a good source, and I think there's a whole lot of other good sources too.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's really true. That there, I like to let people know that there's not. I feel personally that there may be some problems with various religions, but I still feel that spirituality is super important, and you know, the things that we get from it. When you look at the core of it, and like look at Jesus Christ or Buddha, or like you said, just focusing, maybe stick with the Abrahamic. That's fine. The Muslim faith, you know, looking at Muhammad, that there is a lot that we can learn and try to learn. But if we can try mucked up, there's still treasure there. You know, there's something of great value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And so I know we've talked about Matthew Fox. I do have room for another question here. I'd love to know, were there any other teachers or influences that have been extremely pivotal in your life, besides Matthew Fox, who we all love.
Then I have a whole pack of indigenous people, because I'm part Cherokee, and so I have a whole, you know, over the years, a lot of the ceremonial work that I've done on the planet has been Native American and Mayan ceremonial work, and so there's a whole pack of people that I've worked with over the years. But a lot of my teachers and mentors and all there have left the planet at this point, because, you know, in my case, I'm 79, and a lot of them were older than I was, so they're basically passing out at this point.
Right.
So I've written about, of course, in my other books, I've written a lot about some of these people.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to honor our elders and our teachers, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, that you've been part of these indigenous teachings, which I think are, to me, fundamental and some of the way forward for the planet right now.
Well, they're very advanced, and they're also very ancient. We're talking about things that go right back into the core of what it means to evolve as humans, and that's why I love indigenous work, because we're working with things that are very, very ancient and actually don't change that much. The planet has a certain way that it functions, and we work with it shamanically. We work with it according to certain laws, only because we found they work.
And this is what's so reassuring at the time of great crisis like we're in right now.
Yeah.
It's good to know that that exists. Well, thank you so much for being here with me, and I'd love to find out how people can learn more about your work and get in touch with you.
They can't get in touch with me for obvious reasons, you know. But my website, I'm constantly posting at handclow2012.com is my website. And I'm constantly posting interviews I'm doing, like this will be posted. And people can get in touch that way. That's all that's possible, because what would happen if you could get in touch with me is I never would have gotten any work done, because this takes a lot of time. And then, of course, you can get in touch with me by reading my books.
Well, that's true.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Also on the dream plane. You know, I'm a big believer in meditation and just feeling that you've got that connection with the people that are at the same level of awareness, dimensionality, and so forth, that we're all very much together.
And I was out teaching all over the world from the mid-80s up until about 2010. And then when this stuff started shutting down, it's been harder and harder to get around. And now it's almost impossible for me to travel. So that's just, the Zoom is wonderful, by the way, because people are teaching that way. And I'm on Zoom quite a bit on different Zoom shows.
Yes, it is wonderful.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for everything that you've been doing, for everything you've done. I think the high points for me today are, I loved hearing about the alchemy of nine dimensions and its scientific analysis of your channeled work, the Pleiadian Agenda. I think that's amazing. Really phenomenal how you've gone through these ages that we've traversed and discussed some of the characters in this beautiful trilogy of books. So I hope people who are listening do check that out and get in touch, or rather, check that website for Barbara Hand Clough. And again, that's handclough2012.com. Thank you so much, Barbara.
Thank you, Cynthia. I really appreciate the support, too.
My pleasure. And for all of the listeners, I'm encouraging everyone to keep asking my favorite question, how good can it get? Until next time, this is Cynthia Sue Larson with Living the Quantum Dream.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Living the Quantum Dream with your host, Cynthia Sue Larson of RealityShifters.com. Join Cynthia next time in visualizing and accessing whole new worlds of possibility on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.